The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
New year, same us. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, everybody. Your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Phil, have you had a good new year so far?
So far, it's been pretty good. We got to a balmy 57 degrees here in Milwaukee on Saturday, so got to go outside. And today, saw a win. We're going to pretend that Tuesday thing never happened.
Yeah, so yeah, we got into the 30s here in Texas, and so people were, you know, buying milk and bread everywhere. But now we're back up to the 60s, so we're good and normal. But yeah, we're going to talk about a couple Marquette games from this past week. Joe McCannon here, Phil Bush here with you, as you probably assume by now. We're going to talk about the loss to St. John's, what went wrong, the win against Xavier, what went right, and what we are hoping for in the two games to come this week. Also going to talk about a commit, which happened just after the Xavier game, if you missed it. Samir Torrance, who is from the state of New York, committed to Marquette. We're going to talk about him a little bit later on. Phil, let's talk about the thing most recent in our mind as far as the games, and that's the win over Xavier. That was a game only a mother could love, if you ask me. That was not a great offensive performance by either team. Marquette got the win, though. Pretty comfortably, actually. 70-52 was the final score. Great effort from Marcus Howard again. Another, even though he scored fewer points, it almost like it was like Sakar Anum stood out a little bit more. What jumped out to you in the win over Xavier on Sunday?
Well, I'm glad you said it was a game only a mother could love, because sitting in the arena, it was pretty painful. You wanted to get up, but like the crowd was kind of dead. The team, you know, just offensively didn't seem there. I think what stands out to me is it's really nice to have a defense, right? I mean, that's the big thing I took away, was that we won this game entirely around defense. Yes, there was some standout offensive performances by Sakar and Marcus, but you know, all told, it was the defense that made the difference, because every time they started to get a little bit of a run or get close the gap a little bit from a Xavier standpoint, Marquette would clamp back down, and then what little offense we got became enough to widen the gap back out. So
the offense really only came from three guys: Howard 26, Sakar 20, Joey 18. Nobody else had more than two.
Yeah, it was, well, and I mean, Ed Morrow should have had at least 12, but if you between missed layups and multiple travels, which probably would have gotten actually, and Wojo in the post game, I didn't call out Morrow specifically by name, but praised Howard for saying he played a complete game, because he probably should have had a double-double with double-digit assists, but he got the ball to some people where they should have scored, and they did not, inexplicably.
Sam Hauser definitely had an off game for him, 1 of 8 from the floor, 0 of 6 from 3. But like I said, we got enough offense from three guys in particular to get the win. You know, Marquette's defensive numbers probably going to stand out in this game, but Xavier did not shoot the ball well. How much would you – Payne touches through this question out there, and I'll throw it to you, Phil. How much would you attribute Xavier's offensive performance to Marquette's defensive effort, and how much was just Xavier playing poorly?
That's a tough one. I mean, being in the arena and seeing it live, I mean, I think Marquette was closing out much faster than Xavier expected or – is used to, because they had a relatively, I can't quantify it, but I felt like the number of wide open shots Xavier had and didn't hit was relatively small. They seemed to have a hand in their face just about every time. And I mean, they went, what, 1 of 14 from 3, 1 of 15?
Yeah, they were putrid from downtown. And, you know, I guess watching on television, I thought they had some looks that they probably should have hit, but, you know, maybe overall Marquette's effort did maybe speed up their offense more than Xavier wanted to, and they took a few, maybe took some bad shots. But yeah, I'd say my take is kind of equal parts Xavier shooting poorly, but Marquette's effort on defense can't be denied.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to say that Marquette completely dominated them on defense, but they're definitely, I mean, that is a outstanding defensive effort and and where Xavier may have struggled to shoot some make some baskets that that were open, Marquette was definitely denying them or forcing them into fadeaways. Especially in the ISO game, I think a lot of the perimeter defenders really stepped up and helped, because there wasn't, you know, Theo John was in foul trouble. Ed Morrow got a lot of minutes. You know, Matt Held got some significant run, which we hadn't seen for a while now because of the Theo's foul trouble. So there wasn't a lot of rim protection help, and yet the perimeter defenders still managed to keep overall Xavier shooting less than 35% on the game. So that, I mean, you got to give a lot of, I'd say it's probably 60-40 Marquette defense.
Yeah, the foul trouble was also probably to blame for maybe the ragged pace of that game, especially in the first half. It seemed like there were a lot of fouls being called. Like, I think there were probably close to 20 fouls in the first half,
yep.
Something like that. And so, yeah, the game was a little ugly to watch. Maybe not ideal for Fox putting it, you know, on a, I guess they put it on early because they didn't want to compete with football, but still, wasn't the prettiest game. But Marquette got the win, so never going to complain about a win, because they certainly did enough. It was a nice bounce back performance for Howard after a pretty frustrating game from him on Tuesday against St. John's. He just did not have it at all. Not that he was lights out from three, but he hit enough shots to really keep the momentum going. And even if Xavier did creep back into it and maybe get down to single digits, the win was never really in doubt, because whenever Xavier would start to maybe get a little bit of momentum, Howard would knock down a three or hit a tough shot somewhere and really kind of take the wind out of their sails.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and let me ask you this. I mean, we've seen Sakar, especially in the first half, was really a key cog on the offense. He was, at one point, he was outscoring Xavier in the first half by himself. You know, we've seen Sakar pop up. I mean, it's memorable, the Creighton, the second half of the away Creighton game last year. A couple other games, he kind of seems to pop up and really generate some offense. He'd been relatively quiet this season, offensively anyway. Do you think this is a turning point for him, or is this another one of those blips? He had a good matchup, good scout that enabled him to generate offense.
You know, I think it's just another – you know, pop-up performance from Sakar, and that's okay. You know, I don't think you necessarily need him to score 20 every night, but on a day when Sam Hauser just didn't have it offensively, it was nice that Marquette had another option out there. And maybe, I don't know if that's Sakar taking an initiative, or maybe the team just looking for other options because they knew Sam really just didn't have it on Sunday. But for whatever, yeah, I don't know if it's going to be like an emergence that we're going to continue to see more and more 20-point games from Sakar consistently, but yeah, I think he will pop up and get a game like this, you know, every so often, once every 3-4 games, something like that. But yeah, it's nice when he does this, because it's nice that other teams have to account for him in the next game, because maybe Creighton will try to account for him more in the next game, and then maybe that'd be an opportunity for Sam to hit a few more shots. But yeah, I guess to answer what you were getting at, is Sakar emerging as a go-to scorer? I wouldn't go that far, but I think he's just more a more reliable third or fourth option that can, on occasion, be your second option.
Yeah, well, and I mean, Xavier was running a lot of attention at Howard, you know, rightfully so, right? So they were seemingly doubling him on switches and stuff like that. So that, I think, freed up Sakar to make a lot of a lot out of it. Plus, you know, one of the things that's interesting with Xavier is Xavier's probably one of the longest 1-5 teams we're gonna play, right? Like, I mean, they had a 6'6" right. guy guarding Howard, which is kind of has been kind of the notorious thing with Howard, is if you can put a long defender on him, he's gonna struggle there with obvious reasons.
Yeah, he has to settle for more step back threes as opposed to really, you know, pull the trigger quickly when he can get over a guy who's, you know, equal height.
Right, exactly. So I think it just it was a good matchup for Sakar, where, you know, there was more length for Xavier, but maybe not as quick, and Sakar was kind of the one to exploit it. So hopefully Sam Hauser can bounce back, because he's had a couple of rough games here, and hopefully he can start to, you know, I don't know what you would hope, it's not lingering from the hip injury or anything like that, but
I'm just going to chalk it up to an off game. He's still shooting almost 40% from three. on the year. His, you know, offensive rating is still pretty good. So I'm just going to chalk it up to bad game and, you know, expect he's going to bounce back later, you know, in the games coming up this week.
Yeah, that's the hope, certainly.
So let's, before we move on to the Creighton game, which I guess these two games kind of go hand in hand, talk about one going to the other, talk about what happened in the St. John's game, because certainly, as much as I would like to pretend it didn't happen, it did happen, and boy, that was a ragged performance. The thing concerning for me a little bit, Phil, as Marquette looks ahead to Creighton on Wednesday, is Marquette has had two true road games this year and just gotten blown out in both of them. The Indiana game back on November 14th, and then St. John's on New Year's Day. I'm hoping that maybe that trend stops on Wednesday, but certainly the result in New York on Tuesday was cause for concern.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We clearly don't have enough. As you said, there have only been two true road games. Granted, both were blowouts, but I don't think that this is. We have enough evidence yet that says this is a team that they go on the road and they fall apart. They can only win at Five Serve Forum or in neutral sites. That St. John's game. I mean, that was probably. I can't say I've watched a ton of St. John's games, but of what I have seen, that was the best I had seen St. John's play all season. They were clearly fired up and ready to take it to Marquette, and they hit some shots.
And St. John's was – yeah, they were a little pissed off after what happened to them in the Seton Hall game a few days earlier.
Yeah.
They had that terrible call that basically allows Seton Hall to get an extra shot and win the game. So maybe they were a little pissed off, and maybe some of the officiating went in St. John's way after they knew what happened in the previous game. And, you know, you're going to get a tough whistle on the road sometimes. You know, I said on Twitter on Tuesday that, you know, you're going to lose some road games in conference play, and just as from a win-loss perspective, that's one you can stomach because, you know, if you lose four road games in conference play, you're still going to be in pretty good shape, I think, as long as you hold serve at home. But just the fact that it just got demolished, especially in the second half, was just maybe a little concerning to me. But you know, the fact that they bounced back and handled Xavier pretty easily tells me it wasn't a sign of a huge problem overall for the team. But I would just hope for a better effort on Wednesday against Creighton on the road, just to tell me this team can put it together away from Fiserv Forum.
Yeah, well, and that's going to be the thing is I mean, can they put it? At what point does the team start to think, well, maybe there is something, you know, to this, right? Like, does that enter into the back of their minds a little?
Yeah, hopefully it wouldn't be that much of a mental game with them. I'm sure they've looked at both the Indiana game and the St. John's game and said, that's not us.
Right.
Like, you know, and it's happened twice, and okay, that happens sometimes. Sometimes you play like crap over a course of 30-plus games, right? You're just not going to have a great effort every night. And that was one of Marquette's garbage efforts of the season. You watch the tape once, and then you burn it and say, that's not us. We're not going to do that again. But, yeah, it was concerning because I think as that game went along and St. John's kept extending the lead and Pons kept hitting shots, I think the defense got looser and looser. It was almost like they just couldn't wait to get back on offense and try to score again as opposed to trying to stop Pons. Because St. John's kept getting open shots and hitting open shots, and it just spiraled out of control. And I think once you got kind of halfway through that second half, it was like, well, there's no stopping this. We know where this is going.
Well, and it bled over to the offense where there was just some ridiculous play. Or, you know, I mean, there was one. And Marcus, it's notable, Marcus got pulled with about, I want to say, 8-9 minutes left in the second half and did not come back in. I mean, it's probably a combination of not wanting to get hurt, but also, you know, maybe Wojo going, hey, you don't got it. You know, we need to.
Hey, don't have it tonight. Let's just try something else.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it, much in the same way Sam didn't have it on Sunday, Marcus did not have it on Tuesday.
Yeah, like that was probably one of the worst games I'd seen Marcus play at least this year and last year. I mean, there was one series where drove under the basket, tried to lay it up, got a rebound, and just chucked it up. Like it was just a weird, like it wasn't even legit shots. Never looked to pass it anywhere. You know, so Marcus was just not playing well, and I think that took the rest of the team out of sync. And then, you know, like you said, as the game went on, the defense got looser and looser. But it's not like it was completely falling apart throughout the whole game. You know, Pons hit a couple of threes from ridiculous range right before halftime that kind of really blew the doors open. Instead of going into halftime down three or four, all of a sudden we were going into halftime down 11. So that changes the paradigm a little bit, but I want to say I'm cautiously optimistic. It's a outlier and not a trend from a road game or from a competitive standpoint.
Yeah, but now let's see if they can prove it. On Wednesday, they're going to be taking on Creighton, and that's, you know, one of the tougher environments in the Big East, just because it's one of the bigger arenas and it's always full, right?
Right.
Creighton, don't they get close to 18,000 a game,
yep,
something like that?
They're a top 25 attendance in NCAA basketball every year. So
yeah, so I mean, and they really support that. And Creighton's been pretty good this year. And I think they're off to a 1-1 start in Big East play, kind of like almost everybody. It seems like it's going to be one of those seasons where I think the gap between, you know, 1-10 is not going to be all that much when we get to the end of the season. But you know, Creighton has some nice wins that, you know, most of their losses are kind of forgivable. I mean, they lost to Ohio State, who's in the top 25, Gonzaga, who's one of the top five teams in the country, Nebraska's in the top 25. Losing at Oklahoma is probably not ideal, but Oklahoma's not terrible. And then they lost to Butler on Saturday. But, you know, their KenPom numbers are pretty good. Their offense is really good. Defense, not great. So hopefully it's a night where the Marquette offense can hopefully get going again. But this one could be more of a high-scoring game, in looking at some of the offensive numbers Creighton's put up this year.
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, I don't know literally, but Creighton, at least from a statistical standpoint, looks a lot like us, like Marquette did last year, right? Like really good offense and poor to really poor defense, right? I mean, they're
on KenPom. Number 12 offense, number 121 defense. But yeah, that is similar to a Marquette team of the previous two seasons for sure.
Yeah, and they're very, I mean, they're a great 3-point shooting team, and they depend on it a lot. So it's gonna take a lot for Marquette to really close out and challenge those threes and get out there from a defensive standpoint. But the what will be interesting to see is Creighton's also one of the shorter overall teams we're going to play. I don't, you know, they do have a 7-footer in Froehling, who is he not Harry Froehling's brother?
Yeah, younger brother.
Younger brother. So maybe
it's a shame they never get to face off in the Big East.
That's true. You know, so Froehling's 7-foot, but other than that, most of their players are.
He doesn't play a ton of minutes, though.
Right.
He'll shoot the hell out of it when he gets the ball when he's in the game, though. He'll play. You know, he'll take his shots, but he does not. He has a high usage rate, but he does not play a lot of minutes.
Right. And so they're generally 6'8 or shorter. So it's not, you know, and they're, you're playing somebody who's 6'4, 6'5 at the most at the three. So we shouldn't have like against Xavier where it's a bunch of tall players going after our guards and swingmen. So we should have some advantage there, hopefully. But I'm with you. I think it's going to be a real high scoring game. I think Marquette's defense is solid, but I don't think it's solid enough to shut down such a great offense playing at home, where we think that the defense can win the game. I think the offense is going to have to come up with enough points to cover whatever Creighton throws at us.
Yeah, the 3-point percentages looking at Creighton are kind of alarming. They're so good. You know, as a team, they're number 5 in the country in 3-point percentage, 42% as a team, which is outstanding. And really, almost everyone on the team, except maybe like basically everyone on the team in different sample sizes, shoots 40% or better from 3. Only a couple guys shoot. Froehling's only attempted 7, and he's below 30%. Another guy's at 30%. I mean, Crample, he's you know, one of their better scorers, but he's below 30%. And then pretty much everybody else is 36% or better. So do not leave these guys open from downtown, because they will fire away, and they could. And that's a concern when you get on the road. If a team is really knocking down threes, and if your offense is stagnant at all, they could pull away and build a huge lead in the blink of an eye, and then you're down. 15 points on the road, and there's almost no way back.
Yeah, well, I would suspect this game, the results, it's kind of a bifurcated result. It's either Marquette wins a close one or Creighton wins going away, right? Like, if Creighton's just
sitting
a bunch
of threes.
Yeah,
that's kind of my feeling, too. It's one of those two ways. Either Marquette's going to have to grind out a win with a great defensive effort and really limit their shooting, or this could be another Marquette road blowout where they just get their doors blown off by a team that really shooting the ball well. So I'm hoping it's not the latter there, but I would hope they're going to turn it around. But based on the way Creighton shoots the ball and Marquette's last two road performances, there is cause for concern that this one could go poorly this week.
Yeah, and again, I don't think – I mean, playing St. John's, Indiana, and Creighton on the road, if you told me we went 0-3 there, I mean, that's not terribly shocking. I don't think it's cause for panic.
No.
But, you know, thankfully we'll have, you know, we got to win an away game sometime and
yeah,
maybe
yeah, and
Georgetown.
The thing is the winnable road games are coming up.
You know, right.
Georgetown is the next road game. Then Xavier and Butler will both be tough, but I wouldn't say they're unwinnable. And then you still got, you got Providence later on and DePaul, of course, later on. But, you know, we know our history traveling to DePaul. So
yeah.
There's really no great places to win a road game in the Big East. But like you said, Marquette does need to win a road game at some point. Ideally, you know, 3, 4, or 5. That would be great.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's unfortunate most of their road games early on are pretty tough ones.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, KenPom, you know, gives us less than a 40% chance to win the game. But, I mean, again, I think Marquette can play enough defense and the offense can be strong enough to get a win against Creighton. It's going to be interesting. I mean, Creighton, I think Butler's a good team, but I didn't think they were a 15 points better than Creighton good team. So, you know, and I didn't get to watch the game, so I don't know whether or not, you know, Butler was really that good or Creighton was really that bad or some combination thereof. I guess I say Marquette's got a chance, but it's going to be a bit of an uphill climb, I think.
Yeah, so whatever happens in Omaha on Wednesday, hopefully Marquette can come back home and have another strong performance at home against Seton Hall on Saturday. Seton Hall off to a pretty good start because they've played three games already and they've gotten two wins. One perhaps questionable against St. John's in the opener, but they also have a real turd of a loss because they lost to DePaul.
Right.
That's something you never want to happen. But, you know, everyone, you know, again, there's probably a lot of parody in the Big East. I hate using the word parody, but it kind of applies here. But, you know, they've, like Marquette, they do have a win over Xavier, although it was a road win. And then they played St. John. So some common opponents so far between Seton Hall and Marquette. This one being at home, KenPom has that as a decent advantage for Marquette, though, taking on Seton Hall. Then on the other hand, you are going up against another one of the league's elite scorers in Powell from Seton Hall, who's probably going to be right there with Pons and Howard in the Big East Player of the Year discussion. What jumps out to you in the matchup with Seton Hall, Phil?
Well, I mean, this is going to be one of the few teams we play, Xavier aside, and we saw how that works out. But Seton Hall doesn't shoot the three very well at all, so it's going to be much more of an interior game for Seton Hall, which will be interesting, right? Like I would expect somebody like Theo John, again, if Marquette's winning, to have a big game, both on the defensive and the offensive end. Because I think Seton Hall likes to drive the ball, likes to play through the post. So that's going to be a little different.
You know,
than
we've there's
seen.
Always Powell on the outside, though.
Correct.
You know, like as a team, they don't shoot the three well, but there's always Powell. He's shooting 37% from three. So even though if most of their strength is on the interior, Powell and McKnight can shoot it as well. He's 37% on the season as well. So they have guys who can hit threes, but it's far and away Powell is their number one 3-point threat because he's not only shooting 37%, he's attempted 120, which is more than double their next highest total as far as 3-point attempts on the season. So Powell is really your only threat to really light you up from the 3-point range against Seton Hall.
Right. Well, and I'm assuming Sakar is going to get the bulk of the minutes against Powell.
You would hope.
You would think, right? Like put a little length on him and see how that goes. So that's the expectation. Again, I think – I haven't seen a ton of Seton Hall, but it's definitely a game that Marquette should win, especially at home. You know, you'd not, like to see a little bit of a – Little bit of a winning streak here. If you can get a Xavier, Creighton, Seton Hall, that kind of starts to feel a little bit like, hey, we got something here.
Right. When there's going to be this much parity in the league, you know, you just don't want to be alternating wins and losses, and especially, you know, going home away, you know, lose all your away games, win all your home games, you know, because, you know, then you're going to find yourself at somewhere between 10-8 and 8-10, and you're going to be kind of grouped in there with six other teams in the middle of the league. And eventually some team is going to emerge and get to that 12-plus win mark, and you're hoping it's Marquette. But, you know, we look at the standings early on. Guess who's at the top? Well, it's Villanova again.
Yeah, it's early.
Maybe Villanova will be that team, but, you know, it's so many teams are within striking distance and viewed as statistically very close to Villanova that there are probably – I don't know, 3, 4, 5 teams who are looking at this thing right now saying, look, we can win the league. We have a good shot to win this league. And Marquette is one of them. But, yeah, like you were saying, you just don't want to keep going on the road and keep losing. And you'd like to really fare well against some of these teams like Seton Hall and Creighton and Butler, these teams that you're probably going to be grouped in with in the middle of the conference if you want to emerge past those teams and finish near the top of the league. You got to beat these teams.
Yeah.
Especially at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, these next couple of games are where you go, all right, is Marquette a legit good team or not? And you mentioned 10-8, right? 10-8 probably gets Marquette in, especially with the non-conference, though, some of those teams.
Oh, yeah. I would say certainly.
Yeah.
I was running some numbers on, what's it called, T-Rank on the Bartovic site.
Bartovic, yeah.
Where you can kind of simulate Marquette's record, your team's record, and kind of see where they are. If you're worried about Marquette missing the tournament, Sam, and thinking about how bad it
can
be.
Panic button.
Marquette needs to be like 6 wins or worse, I think. Because I simulated it at about 7-11. It still had Marquette around a 9 seed. So if you're fearing missing the tournament, I think we're a long way from that. But yeah, 10-8, Marquette is comfortably in.
Yeah. But I mean, the goal is, you know, to so in theory, you're really playing for seeding. The goal is to give yourself a better than 50-50 chance of winning that first game. So 10-8 puts you down somewhere. Probably, you know, you're finishing. Hell, I mean, you could finish. We've seen 10-8 gets you anywhere as low as 7th in the league when you get a log jam in the middle
right.
of the pack,
yeah,
right?
Depending on tiebreakers, for sure.
Right. You know, so, you know, we definitely don't want to be an 8-9 seed in the tournament. We'd like to see a top 5 seed, you know, no doubt. So, and beating a Creighton on the road and a Seton Hall at home, are those are the types of games you need to be able to do that, to prove that you've got a seeding like that. So, again, I think I haven't seen anything. Obviously, there's a little worry with the road results so far. But I haven't seen anything that makes me, you know, like convinced that we can't win at Creighton or, you know, that somehow we're going to lose these next two games. I'm actually fairly confident we'll win at least one and, you know, a better than 30% chance we win both.
I hope you're right on the both thing. If I'm making a pick for this week, I'm kind of going to have to lean 1-1. Just because Marquette on the road has not convinced me of anything yet, so I think you probably go to Omaha and lose. So I'm going to say a hopefully not a blowout, but I'll say a loss that is probably rarely in doubt for Creighton. And I'll say they will come back and beat Seton Hall at home. So I'm going to go for 1-1 this week if I'm making a pick.
Yeah, I think I have to join you there. I mean, I want to say that they're going to be fired up and as prepared to prove themselves as they belong. But until they prove that they can win on the road against a very talented offense. You know, and this would kind of prove that the defense is legit, right? I mean, there was some statistics I saw floating around there around Marquette's defense against top 25 offenses, and it wasn't great. And Creighton certainly is one of those. So, you know, hopefully this doesn't feed the fire, but there's a potential. But again, I don't think the panic needs to issue if they do lose to Creighton. There's plenty of opportunities to still make it up, but it is troublesome if they lose.
Yeah, and while I'll stop short of calling any stretch of Big East play easy, there are opportunities to maybe get a little bit of a winning streak going as long as you can beat Seton Hall on Saturday. Because then, you know, your next road game is Georgetown, which, while I wouldn't call it a layup or anything, Georgetown is not one of the stronger teams in the league. That's a place you can go on the road and win. Then you get Providence and DePaul at home. You should win both of those games. Then you're going on the road to Xavier, who you just handled. Hope it'll be tougher in their place, but that's another opportunity to hopefully get a road win. And then, you know, make it a little tougher after that, because then you're going on the road to Butler, and then you got St. John's and Villanova after that. But there is kind of a stretch here towards mid to late January where hopefully Marquette can stack up a few wins and maybe kind of rise to the top of the Big East standings and hopefully stay there for the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, the team has proven itself to be talented. Let's hope the St. John's thing was more of a mental breakdown than anything where they can't play at that level, and we'll hope for the best against Creighton and Seton Hall.
All right, so let's see how those two games go. Before we get out of here, we do want to talk about a little bit of recruiting. There hasn't been a whole lot of recruiting talk over the last, you know, few weeks because Marquette's kind of full on scholarship. They still have one left for 2019, but they have landed their first commitment from 2020 from point guard Samir Torrance. He is from Syracuse, New York. He is playing his current season at Vermont Academy. He's a combo guard, really wants to be a point guard in college, really projects to be a point guard. You know, I think I saw an interview from him. Yeah, I guess it was on Twitter, and he was, you know, talking about how he liked how Wojo played the position that he wants to play, because he really sees himself as a lead guard, as a point guard. For now, he is a 2020 prospect. There are some rumblings that he may reclassify. I think it was on Adam Zagoria's blog where the reporter asked him and said, Marquette has offered you to come as either 2019 or 2020. And he said, I'm 2020 for now, but I can always make that decision later. So sounds to me, Phil, that Marquette's last remaining scholarship for 2019 belongs to Torrance if he wants it. But the current plan is for him to arrive in 2020. He's a top 50 player in the 2020 class. So, you know, if you're looking at Marquette in 2020 and, you know, it's tough to talk about, but we got to face it. Four very good players are running out of eligibility that year. Marcus Howard, Sam Hauser, Sakar Annam, Ed Morrow. They'll all be leaving after that season. So the crop that comes in after them is going to be very important as far as determining if Wojo can continue building momentum or takes a step back and has to rebuild with some young guys for a little bit. So to start the 2020 class with a top 50-ish guy is a nice start.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good get. You know, and again, length at the point guard, and he's described himself as a pass first, kind of a generate, run the offense, kind of more of a traditional point guard, but he certainly can shoot the three, so that helps keep it focused. The 2019 versus 2020 thing is interesting. I suspect I would guess he's probably going to stay 2020 unless something happens to open up some playing time in 2019. You know, if a certain player is not here after.
Yeah, that's
kind
of what I'm
season.
Thinking too. You know, I guess I don't know if you're necessarily alluding to Marcus Howard.
I am.
Just speaking in general terms, but you know, I would say, yeah, if Marquette were to lose a guard, especially if it's Marcus Howard going pro, or if some other guard leaves the program, I think that would expedite the possibility of getting Torrance on campus for next season. But, you know, if you're Torrance and the current scholarship situation stays as projected, you probably don't see a whole lot of playing time for yourself in 2019 at Marquette, because basically you're taking the exact same roster Marquette has now. You're losing Chartouni, but Greg Elliott comes back into the fold.
Yep.
And so other than that, all the minutes are taken for. And there's also Dexter Ocano, who's already committed. He'll be there next year. So
plus our transfer.
Ton of minutes available. I'm sorry.
Plus the transfer. I'm blanking on his name all of a sudden. The point guard transfer.
Oh, yeah, Kobe McEwen. He's
McEwen,
next
yeah.
Year. Right.
Yeah.
So there's probably not a ton of minutes available at the guard spot if the roster projection holds for the 19-20 season. So you might as well stay at your prep school and just, you know, continue to develop and gain some strength where you, you know, be in a situation where you're playing every day, where as opposed to coming to Marquette where you, you know, a red shirt might be on the table if everyone is back next year. But if he's staying in 2020, then he could show up for the 2020-2021 season. Well, that's a mouthful. It's a lot of 20s.
Yeah.
But he could be in a position to get a lot of playing time because there will probably be a lot of minutes available depending on how, you know, what other guys come into the program. So I guess that's kind of my guess as far as what he is thinking regarding reclassification and getting on campus right away or just staying in his current class and just, you know, finishing up his academics at a leisurely pace, even if it means, you know, he could take AP courses or whatever if he wants to get ahead from the college course standpoint or whatever he wants to do. But, yeah, I think you're kind of hitting the nail on the head there as far as what may determine whether he reclassifies or not.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the balance of that 2020 class, assuming he stays classified as 2020, because as you mentioned, that's a, you know, we're after next year graduating a lot of players, Sam, Marcus, Sakar, Ed Morrow will be gone. So there'll be a lot of beef off the team as well in terms of post play and kind of the bigger men. Theo John will be a senior that year. So you would think that Torrence would be probably the last guard that they pick up on the recruiting trail for the next year or two. They need to get some big guys in the next couple of years.
Yeah,
because
if you're looking at
class.
Yeah, if you're looking at Marquette up front after 2020, you know, you have John, and then you have basically the question mark that is Igeke. I mean, at this point, I hope he's able to contribute at Marquette, but he hasn't seen the floor in 2 years.
Yeah, I would be. I'd love for him to play. I mean, just for his own sake that he'd be able to play. But I'm certainly not holding my breath that he will ever suit up for Marquette at this point.
Yeah, or if he does, maybe will he ever be a significant contributor?
Right.
You know. There's still a long way to go, and you know, as it is now, he is a redshirt freshman, so he has 3 years. But the fact that he hasn't seen the floor in 2 years and has had injury trouble is certainly cause for concern. And even if it wasn't, your front court is really just at that point Theo John and Joey Hauser.
Right. Well, and
that's about it.
Yeah, and Brendan Bailey would be a wing, and then that would be a 24-year-old senior.
Right. Yeah. Well, he would be a 24-year-old.
Junior. Yeah, junior.
Yes.
But still.
Yeah, so. But, yes, you know, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I get what you're saying. But, yeah, obviously Marquette has some holes to fill in the 2020 class. But, you know, us, you know, Torrance is a nice start. And so, you know, Wojo may have three, four, or five more guys to get in that class. And so to have a top 50 guy on board already, you know, that's a good start. And hopefully you're going to continue to get more top 50-ish guys coming that way. Obviously, you know, the big fish out there is Jalen Johnson, who's a top five guy, and I know Marquette is working their ass off to try to get that guy to commit, but, you know, that's a pretty big fish to go after. But, you know, don't give up until he eliminates you. I mean, he's right there in Milwaukee. He's right there in town. I think somebody tweeted a picture a few weeks ago of Marquette players just attending one of his high school games. It was like Marcus Howard, Joey Hauser, and I forget who else, but they were just, you know, hanging out at Jalen Johnson's game, just watching him play. And so I've seen on Instagram Marquette fans asking him questions, and he still tweets out pictures of himself in Marquette gear, like when he's been on campus or when he's done unofficial visits, or I don't know if that's just somebody doing an edit for him. But Marquette has not been eliminated from Jalen Johnson, but the fact that he has offers from Duke and Kansas and Kentucky, you know, makes you pessimistic there. But don't give up on him until he says you're out.
Well, and as long as he doesn't go to Wisconsin, which...
yeah, as long as he doesn't go to Wisconsin. Hopefully not. But now that you talk about him, see if there's anything lately as far as any visits or anything that Jalen Johnson has taken. He's a 2020 guy, and I haven't seen anything about him reclassifying. But, yeah, if you're not familiar with him, he's... if you're a basketball junkie who lives in the Milwaukee area, maybe go watch Nicolette play. That's his high school right there in Milwaukee. They're just absolutely loaded. But, yeah, nothing new on him. But, you know, all the suspects that you would expect have offered him: Arizona, UCLA. It's an interesting situation there.
Yeah.
He actually officially visited UCLA back in November. But
you would think they'd be out
Kentucky,
now.
Ohio State. But what'd you say there?
I would say you would think UCLA would be out of the running now. That's turning into a dumpster fire.
Depending on who they hire. Yeah. You know, some people are saying they might go after Rick Pitino.
Oh, my God.
Then I wouldn't count them out for anybody.
But, well, the bags will get
Carolina,
dropped.
Yeah, North Carolina's in on him. Of course, Wisconsin's in on him. You know, basically everybody has any program of significance. Kansas has offered. Every program of significance has offered Jalen Johnson. But Marquette's not out. I wouldn't say they're the favorite, not even close, but again, don't give up on him. And the fact that you've got a top 50 guy on board, at least a little momentum building for 2020, because I would imagine, considering the guys Marquette is or, you know, or was chasing in the 2019 class, and most of them have committed elsewhere, there's really not a whole lot of rumblings of Marquette in on any other big 2019 guys. And I think for the reason of the roster situation, because, you know, any right or wrong, anybody – any player in the top 50 or so in the nation views himself as a guy who wants to get to the NBA quickly and wants to play soon. So when they look at Marquette's roster, they probably say, not sure I'm getting a lot of playing time there. Or if they're in the top 10, they're probably looking at Duke or Kentucky or something like that. So there's just not a really good fit for Marquette left in the 2019 class. So I think most of Wojo and Stan and Brett Nelson's efforts are focused on 2020. And by the way, if I'm name-dropping assistants, it sounds like this is the first recruit that really Duane Killington bringing.
Yeah, so I guess making his money already.
Yeah, so I mean this is kind of the first big win for Killington recruiting, because I guess he was recruiting Torrance back when he was at UConn, so his Northeast ties. So kudos to him for that. This is the first recruit that he's kind of had a really major hand in bringing to Marquette.
Yeah, so it's a big win for Marquette on the recruiting trail, and good to see, you know, the assistants recruiting up and down the bench, right? More than just depending on Stan and Wojo. So all around,
yeah,
good stuff.
And that's important to get contributions for everybody, because with guys like reputations like Stan and Brett Nelson, you're not going to keep those assistants forever, right? Eventually, those guys are going to get head coaching jobs, and not that I'm wishing them to leave, but I'm just accepting of the fact that good assistant coaches get head coaching jobs, and if they get them, good luck to them, and they'll move on. But
yeah, well, it's no different than like if people being worried about Duke coming for Wojo. Listen, if Duke's coming for Wojo, it's because he's been doing a really good job in Marquette.
Exactly.
If Stan's leaving to go somewhere for a good program, it's because he's been doing a really good job and good things have been happening at Marquette. So, you know, that's a good problem to have, not a bad problem to have.
Absolutely. All right. Anything else before we get out of here?
No, I think we covered it. It's kind of we're settling into to Big East, and we got a couple of wins to go get.
All right. Let's hopefully we get two. Hopefully I'm wrong. You went 1-1 as well, right?
Yep, I went 1-1.
All right. So hopefully we're both wrong, and it's a sweep for Marquette. Get two wins and really get some momentum going this week. As always, we thank you guys for listening here on Scrambled Eggs. Please hit us up on Twitter with your questions, your comments, or any funny stories you have. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is M-O-O-F-23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. Leave your comments and your thoughts there. Please go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate, review, leave comments. We appreciate that as well. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page where we post the podcast as well. Phil, enjoy the rest of your week. I know many of our listeners are either ecstatic or in mourning over what happened in the NFC wildcard game. I hope everyone can get over it and just enjoy a week of Marquette basketball.
Parquet!
Seashells and balloons, everybody.